Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in about 15 minutes. How to beat the credit companies at their own game. We will get specific, but we continue until then with Stephen Flynn, transportation and trade security expert, author of The Edge of Disaster, Rebuilding a Resilient Nation. And he's done all kinds of things. He was an advisor to President Clinton and to the first President Bush. He was on that Rudman-Hart Commission that warned of our vulnerability to a terrorist attack before 9/11, but got largely ignored. So he's been at this for a long time. Mark in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
How you doing? I'm a motorman down in the subway. Every subway train can have more than 2,000 people on it, but it's staffed by two individuals, the motorman and the conductor. The motormen and conductors in the subway have not been trained to do anything, nothing, in case of national or a big emergency. I mean, we know how to evacuate a train in a very routine way. But, you know, if there's anything like violent or anything frightening, you know, there's been no kind of training at all for us. For all we know, you open the window and jump out the window and run up the stairs.
Stephen Flynn, have you looked at the New York City subways in that regard?
I have, and I think this gentleman is quite right. I mean, this is sort of almost a low-lying fruit issue, which is you make sure that the people who are likely to be on the front lines, in this case the motormen and the enginemen, are trained to think about the what-ifs. And they've been some training, but it's very, very limited. It's a sort of a short video they've had people go look at. You know, it's not the kind of thing that, as a retired Coast Guard officer, I put my people through in order to train to do hardcore search and rescue. It was a happy medium, of course, in here, but we still have a long ways to go. And basic things, again, like lighting and make sure you have adequate emergency egress in the inside the tunnel system. You know, there was a scary thing for a lot of New Yorkers who found themselves there when the lights went out back in the summer of 2003. This is going to cost some resources, but as a kind, I ask people to put this into context as well. We're saying the war on terrorism, and it is, terrorism is a hazard. It's going to be there, and there are some scary folks who are up to some scary things. But each day for the last now 4 years in Iraq, we've spent $250 million a day to basically confront a threat that may pose a hazard to our shores. And yet we're not able to cough up in the total amount of money we're willing to spend on chemical security this year for the facilities around this country, about 14,000 of them, some of them having some of the most hazardous things on the planet, nearby crowded, densely neighborhoods here, is $25 million. Right? That's equivalent to 150 minutes in Iraq is what we're spending to protect a sector of what are potentially weapons of mass destruction, pre-located in highly congested areas next to other critical things like ports,
so,
and water treatment facilities, and yet we're not making very prudent investments to try to reduce the exposure of those facilities to the surrounding population.
So how do you prioritize? Is there low-hanging fruit, as you called it before, that we should pluck first?
Yes, absolutely. Well, some things are more critical than others, and some things, in terms of things that pose the greatest danger to the loss of life, it is things like chemical facilities because of where they're located. Now, how you think about securing them is not all about gates, guards, and guns, and Jersey barriers and these kinds of things. One of the things you need to do is look at, is there a way that they could use different chemicals, that chemicals that don't vaporize turn into plumes that hug the ground if released by accident or by terrorists that kill everybody downstream? Could they store it differently? Is there ways to change the processes? You know, the reality is, in some cases, even the location. Many of our cities grew up around these facilities, and it was in a more benign time. But now we're in a different age, and you would think we've been working overtime on this since 9/11, given the blood and treasure we've invested in looking for chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The reality was it wasn't until even last October that the new Department of Homeland Security had the authority to look at the security plans for most of the highest-risk chemical facilities around the country. And so, the mix here is a basic critique I've had is, we put virtually all our effort into confronting threats beyond our shores, imagining somehow that that's where all the perils come from. And part of what I'm trying to do in the book is it's not just a terrorism issue. The things we can't prevent, which are natural disasters, are going to happen with increasing frequency. Things like climate change are going to affect the hurricane issue. and it's just a question of time on earthquakes. We can prevent them, though, from becoming catastrophes. You know, the hurricane that hit New Orleans was wind and surf. They should have cleaned up afterwards. It was a failure of the flood control system. It was the inadequacy of emergency management. These are things that we can fix, and there are things that we need to make an investment in.
Stephen Flynn, security expert, my guest on WNYC. His new book, The Edge of Disaster, Rebuilding a Resilient Nation. And Patrick in Yonkers, you're on WNYC. Hello, Patrick.
And one quick question to your guest, and that's whether he's our southern border, where not only our human traffic.
Patrick, I got to go because your cell phone line is so bad, but I think I got the gist. He's worried about the Mexican border. How much security threat do you consider it to be?
I think this is one of the things, you know, why I like the resiliency term better here than security. Security gets us very absolutist. You know, sometimes we hear from time to time the Department of Homeland Security Office Secretary Michael Chertoff will say, we have to be right 100% of the time. The terrorists have to be right only once. And this notion that we can somehow harden our borders to deal with these threats is just not practical. I spent a career in the Coast Guard. I spent some time doing a project before 9/11 looking at our land borders down Mexico and along the northern border. I mean, first of all, take the northern border. One-third of it's water. I mean, from Minnesota all the way to New Hampshire is water, and the rest of it's trees. And the idea that somehow, and we're looking for a very small number of people, and increasingly, the character of the terrorists that we're worried about, and this has been, unfortunately, an unintended consequence of the war in Iraq, is having West European profile, people without criminal records, people don't require visas. So you don't have to fly to Mexico and get yourself smuggled across the border. We have a problem with the border as an immigration issue. There's drugs issues and so forth here. But as a major terrorist issue here, it doesn't rise to the level that I think we need to be focused on. We need to really look at what would terrorists hit, why would they hit it, and it's more of a need to look within the U.S. and less about borders and beyond the U.S. that I think we should be focused on. We do those things. We'll need to do those things. But what I'd argue is a lot of that distracts us from the heavy lift and the important investments with benefits that we get from making these investments by building this resiliency here at home.
Joan in Rockaway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joan.
Hi. As I'm hearing you talk about borders and the vulnerability, I'm thinking of all the nuclear power plants that are on the water. I'm also thinking of all the aged nuclear power plants that have been neglected over the years. And I'm thinking about terrorism and the attack of terrorists on a nuclear power plant and what, you know, you're talking about chemical plants, but let's focus on nuclear power.
Do you write about nuclear power plants in the book?
Well, and only peripherally, in part because when we're much smaller numbers than we have in chemical plants, and also from the outset, there's been a lot of investment on the security, and there's a lot of oversight for that. It is not that it's a perfect system. The particular issues are mainly the pools of nuclear waste that pose a problem. But these are pretty hardened facilities from most of the scenarios that we're looking at that are out there right now.
You know, I think we learned from our last two callers how government is, you know, pressured to react to citizen concerns. I mean, generally a good thing in our democracy, but whatever people's hot buttons are, whether it's immigration on one side or nuclear power on another side or whatever, there's going to be a lot of pressure to prioritize those things when it comes to protecting the infrastructure. Not necessarily the right decisions, you know, in a technical term of where the money is best spent to protect the most lives. So that must make it difficult for people like you.
It does, and that's why I end up sort of making a case for a different process. I mean, here's how crazy we can do our what ifs things about, and this is what I'm, you know, trained in a career as a national security. What if bad guys do bad things? But just about a month ago, there was a report for the Wolf Creek Dam. It's a mile-long dam. It holds back the biggest reservoir east of the Appalachians, the Cumberland Lake. It's downstream, which is a small little city called Nashville, and a few other folks along the cities along the Cumberland River. The Corps of Engineers announced that they're going to have to drop the water level by 10 feet as an emergency measure because they're afraid the dam will burst. And this kind of thing ended up on C-17. The New York Times picked it up here recently as a story. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that's going around the country. That's a foreseeable hazard with real consequence. And we've sort of, the main message I'm trying to make in the book, in part, 90% of us, 9 out of 10 of Americans now live in a place at a moderate or high risk of a major natural disaster, an earthquake, hurricane, tornado, flooding. Let's focus on preparing for those events, recognizing that in doing so, we become more resilient, so if terrorists ever strike on our soil, they get less bang for their buck, and it's much more difficult to do. In fact, I would go so far as to say they may look elsewhere to decide to carry out these operations. So let's focus on the foreseeable and consequential things like natural disasters to build emergency planning back up, to get public health and get citizens more involved and engaged, and not about running around getting gas masks and duct tape. You can get that if you'd like. That's at the upper end of the spectrum of low probability but potential consequence. But let's take a deep breath, look at the real hazards that confront us, not get ourselves completely spun up about the man-made one. And again, I'm a national security guy. I've focused on all this all the time. But there is real man-made ones, too. So it's just part of the menu of hazards that I think we need to advance overall. But fundamentally, this investment in here at home and this deterrence around the things that are more likely to affect our lives and disrupt our way of life is a capacity that we desperately need. That's the lesson 9/11. That's the lesson Katrina should be teaching us. Not that all bad things start far from our shores, and we've got to harden ourselves away from neighbors or have us or young men and women make the ultimate sacrifice overseas at every moment. On
Stephen Flynn, one other thing before you go from today's news. There's this dispute between New Jersey's congressional delegation. You have Democratic Senator Frank Lautenberg, Republican Congressman Chris Smith, both taking the lead on this. Between them and the Department of Homeland Security, New Jersey feels it has more stringent chemical plant security than the federal standards require, but the feds want to be able to override any state or local security standard. Why would they want that, and do you have a position on this?
Yeah, in fact, I testified at a field hearing just this past Monday in Newark on this issue here. It's really a bit outrageous. As a security expert who's looked at the chemical issue, and I write about this in the book here, the only way I can protect many of these facilities where they are is to get them to think differently about what they store on scene or the processes they make, and we call that inherently safe technology. The chemical industry has fought this since 9/11. And Governor Corzine, when he took over, has basically implemented and required for the highest risk facilities that they do this, that they consider as a part of their security plan, looking differently at how they do things. The DHS has gotten new authority for the first time, as I mentioned earlier, back in October, to have oversight of security plans, but the chemical industry made sure that they didn't include IST, this inherently safe, secure, safe technology. So the issue is, if the Department of Homeland Security now can preempt the state, the state is robbed of, I think, the most important tool available out there for reducing the risk the chemical industry pose. And it's really rather extraordinary because for 5 years, that Washington essentially said states and locals, you're largely on your own on Homeland Security. What the federal government does is fight wars beyond our shores. And here we have a case of essentially a large group of Republicans rallying around the need for federal preemption. And we have Northern Democrats, senators, and congressmen fighting for states' rights. Mm. It's a bit of the world turned upside down. The bottom line is New Yorkers, New Jerseyans, Pennsylvanians, Delawareans will be better off by having some of the highest risk facilities, which are located in New Jersey, looking at inherently safe technologies. Governor Corzine is pushing that direction, that Washington should be embracing it, not fighting the state of New Jersey and trying to do this. It's really just, frankly, it's reckless.
Troubling, but also very interesting stuff and really kind of empowering stuff because it is such a big, sort of overwhelming, paralyzing world when we think of how to prioritize, what to protect, where to invest our tax dollars. And thanks so much. And people may not agree with your priorities, but it's great to hear some clarity on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
Stephen Flynn, author of The Edge of Disaster, Rebuilding a Resilient Nation, published by Random House. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, how to beat the credit card companies at their own game. Stay tuned.